This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Matt Williams. Matt is the EVP and a partner and runs group planning for the Martin Agency. Now, the Martin Agency may or may not be a company that you know, but by the end of the show, you're going to be very impressed. They're part of the IPG empire, and Ad Age ranked the Martin Agency third among U.S. ad agencies this year. Their billings are over $600 million, and they have an amazing client list, and you're going to get to hear about some of their top clients when you meet Matt today. On today's show, we're going to talk about the account planning discipline, how we can solve it, the Geico Gecko, and the absurdity of the postmodern condition. So let's do it.
I think planners are great component thinkers, where we can take a complicated problem, pull it into its pieces, and be able to tell the important pieces from the unimportant pieces. I think of account planning as the folks who are responsible for finding the intersection between the consumer and the brand. Account planning in a traditional sense and media planning in a traditional sense can come together to combine to create channel planning, which is a way of defining the behavior of a brand and the meaning you want the brand to have and the touch points along the life of a consumer that brand can bring that meaning to life. You think about The Sopranos. The Sopranos is multiple storylines going on at the same time, lots of intricacies, lots of depth, lots of different characters. And I think consumers have gotten to the point where they can not only consume television shows that way, but brands can present themselves that way too. So Geico is a great example of what we like to call multiple storylines.
Welcome, Matt. How are you?
I'm great, Susan. Thanks. How are you?
Well, it's my pleasure to have you on. I don't even remember which publication it was that I read about the We campaign for the first time and you were profiled. What magazine was that? Was it Common Ground or?
It actually might have been the NRDC's magazine.
It was. It was the National Resource Defense Council publication. And I saw the spread on you.
On Earth.
On Earth. I get that. And I called up the agency and I said, I've got to have Matt on the show. I just was really impressed with the work you were doing with that campaign. And so we're going to get to a little bit more about the Alliance for Climate Protection in a second on the show. But before we get there, Matt, you've been at the Martin Agency for 17 years. You practically grew up there. The question I had for you was, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are on the agency side. And you've been at the company for 17 years. Can you just give us a quick synopsis of your career evolution and how you went from being an account exec and moving into the world that you're in now?
Sure. Yeah. I kind of grew up around advertising because my father was a senior marketing guy at DuPont, of all places, for years and years. So he would bring, you know, reels of TV commercials home, and I'd watch them, and we'd talk about them. So I kind of fell in love with advertising when I was younger. And I always liked the combination of creativity and business, and ended up going into account management. And I got wind of the Martin Agency through a good friend of mine who worked at the first agency I worked at, which was Ketchum Advertising in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and you're a Philly boy, or Delaware, DuPont's Delaware, right?
Delaware, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up?
In Wilmington.
Wilmington. Yep. I grew up just outside of Newark, Delaware. So
oh, wow.
I'm from the
okay.
area. Yeah.
There aren't many of us.
I did a semester at the University of Delaware with the Blue Hens. So
Yes, the Fighting Blue Hens. Exactly.
So you were at Ketchum, and then you ended up at the Martin Agency down in Virginia.
And I ended up at the Martin Agency, and I moved down there when I was, 23, 24 years old in account management. And there was no account planning function at Martin at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so all the strategic planning and the consumer research was all managed through account management. And I realized in the course of doing it that I loved 20% of my job, and I tolerated and, frankly, wasn't that great at the remaining 80.
Interesting.
And the 20% I loved was the account planning strategy research stuff. And I ended up conspiring with another person at the Martin Agency, is a guy named Earl Cox. And Earl and I ended up starting up the account planning function at the Martin Agency about 13, 14 years ago.
Well, it's interesting that you say the 80-20 thing, because we just did an episode recently with Marcus Buckingham. He's the kind of career guru. He has a new book called The Truth About You, which is about understanding what your strengths are and then essentially taking the things you do really well that you love to do and turning your job into that. And that's exactly what you just described. And that's his advice.
I took his advice before I even heard it. So.
Well, you told me that Earl Cox was one of your mentors and that he's the person who taught you how to think. That's a bold statement. What did he teach you? How did he teach you that?
He taught me how to simplify things.
Okay.
And how to pull things apart and understand which of those components are important and which need to be set aside.
Mm.
And that's Earl's great gift.
So rational logic kind of deconstructionism.
Or what I like to call component thinking.
Okay.
I think planners are great component thinkers, where we can take a complicated problem, pull it into its pieces, and be able to tell the important pieces from the unimportant pieces. And focus. That's what Earl was all about. He's great at that.
Well, that's really interesting. Component thinking is that I've never heard that phrase before. Is there a process that you use or some place that we could go to learn more about the process of component thinking?
No, to be honest, it's a term that I've made up and used for myself as I've thought about what it takes to be a good planner and the kind of thought processes I look for when I hire planners. Is can you pull things apart and understand the relative importance of those components?
And how do you do that? What's your process?
It's less of a process than I think it is just practice.
Okay.
If I look at somebody like Earl is just wired to think that way. And when you're around somebody like him and you work with him enough, the way I did when I was younger, that I understood how he did this. And I think I honestly maybe went into it with a sort of innate ability to think that way anyway. And he really just helped me fine-tune it and understand the power of it, because it's a very powerful thing when you can pull things apart and focus on what's important.
Well, it sounds like you might have a book in you just around that concept of component thinking. You and Earl.
That's right.
It could be. Well, I think there are a lot of my listeners who work with agencies or are in small agencies, maybe not agencies large enough to have an entire account planning discipline. Would you describe what account planning is and how it fits within the other constructs within an agency?
Sure. I think of account planning as the folks who are responsible for finding the intersection between the consumer and the brand. So if I can understand how our target audience thinks, what's important in their lives, and the role that this brand that I represent can fill that role in a way that's unique to it and is born from its strengths as a company, then I can find the intersection of the consumer and the brand. And as a planner, that's the intersection I'm looking for. And that's where I think the best strategies and the best ideas or strategic ideas come from.
So give us an example of an intersection between a consumer and a brand.
All right. Think about UPS.
Mm-hmm.
So I work on UPS and was involved in the creation of the Brown campaign.
What can Brown do for you?
What can Brown do for you? Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And now you have the new whiteboard extension.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's evolved into the whiteboard. The original challenge with UPS was you have a company who's been around for 95 years at the time and was, far and away the leader in ground shipping, but they had capabilities that nobody knew about or gave them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And that lack of awareness was kind of a built-in governor on UPS's growth, right? So what we realized is that there's a built-in operational efficiency within UPS that made them the best ground shipping company in the world, and people love them for that. But the thing people weren't giving them credit for was a broader array of supply chain management capabilities, and they had them in spades, but nobody thought to think of UPS for that. The consumer needed operational efficiency that came to life in supply chain management ways. Right, UPS had a built-in operational efficiency core competency that people would give them credit for, but they had never applied that. The consumer, customers had never applied that to supply chain management. So this overlap was the need for operational efficiency in supply chain management and UPS's core competency in operational efficiency. And we were able to bring that to life in a way that made people think of this old-style brand in a whole new way.
So a lot of what you do in account planning is research, the intersection of what consumers believe about a brand and what consumers need and what the brand can offer and finding that connection. Is that right?
I think that's exactly right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kind of research are you doing these days in account planning? What's the most common thing that you do?
We still do a lot of face-to-face conversations. I mean, even with all the advance of technology, you still when you want to dig deep into what people need and what their motivations are, sitting down face to face from them is tough to beat.
So there's a real art to that.
Yeah, there really is. So we still do a lot of those face to face interviews. We do use technology to enable us to bring chats together of people speaking with each other in real time, but spread all over the world.
Oh, that's a good one.
Something that we've never been able to do before, and we do a lot of that. There's a lot of quantitative research that we do, whether it's over the phone or over the internet. The burgeoning technology has given us access to consumers in ways that are we never would have dreamt of 10 years ago.
So I know that one of the things I asked you, Matt, when we were getting ready for the show was, what is your favorite conference? And you said you love the Account Planning Group Conference. That's part of the 4As, right?
It is, yeah.
And I was looking at some of the recent agenda items, and there were a couple that caught my eye. And one of them was this, somebody else did this. This wasn't even your speaking platform, but I want to know if you could speak to it, because I was interested in it. There was a session called Channel Planning in Today's Complex Environment. And I thought, wow, no kidding. Could you tell us about channel planning as it comes out of the account planning discipline, and where you are with all that when you think about some of these big clients that you have?
Sure. Yeah. Channel planning has been a thing that has grown leaps and bounds over the last couple of years. And I think it comes from...
You should describe it first.
Yeah, sure. It's a way to handle, in a more strategic way, the proliferation of touch points that are possible between a brand and a consumer. So what I can do as a channel planner is say, if I need to create a certain kind of experience for a consumer with my brand, how can I make contact with that consumer, and what do I want each of those points of contact to accomplish for my brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that used to be kind of the sole province of media planning. That's what media planning was about.
Right, we called it media mix modeling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, now with channel planning, what you can do is have a closer relationship between account planning, which is all about defining the meaning of the brand and how that meaning comes to life with the needs of consumers and the habits of consumers. Those habits are so much more interesting on a media usage level now, because there are so many more types of media that a consumer can use, that account planning in a traditional sense and media planning in a traditional sense can come together to combine to create channel planning, which is a way of defining the behavior of a brand and the meaning you want the brand to have, and the touch points along the life of a consumer that brand can bring that meaning to life.
So what you're essentially doing is plotting all of the places that a consumer could potentially be impacted or connected to a brand, and then also how it fits in the day in the life of that consumer, and then looking at which messages that brand should evoke at what depth in those different mediums, and cutting some out and adding some in so that it's a almost like the right pathway of a connection to a customer.
That's exactly right. And it's not even just messages, it's behaviors. How should the brand behave at this touch point with a consumer? And we actually call it brand experience path.
Really?
We have to create a brand experience path for a consumer to move down. And it's got to be a path that creates a relationship with momentum, and that's fueled by consumer involvement, and it's a dialogue rather than a monologue, and all those things are enabled by technology and accelerated by the connections planning discipline.
Well, you have some amazing clients. I just want to make sure we get out the client list of the Martin Agency. I'll just go through them because it's probably easier for me. I've got them written. Mm-hmm. and then you can talk about them.
Sure.
You've got Walmart, of course. That was a big win for you. You've had UPS for a long time. You have Geico, the Geico Gecko. You have Hanes, BF Goodrich, Seiko Watches, Ping Golf Equipment. I'm sure you like that one.
Yeah, that's
golfer.
A tough one. That's a tough one to work on, let me tell you.
NASCAR, ESPN's X Games. That's fun. You've got a lot of fun stuff. You've got a rum company. Is it Cruisin'?
Cruisin' Rum, yeah.
So you got rum, golf, NASCAR, X Games, got some fun stuff here.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. And then, of course, you have the Alliance for Climate Protection, which is the WE campaign.
That's right.
I'd love to talk a little bit about that one. So this is the one that's kind of the outgrowth of Al Gore's amazing work with his movie, The Inconvenient Truth. Describe the Alliance for Climate Protection, and then I want to talk about specifically the WE campaign and some of the work you've done there.
Sure. The Alliance for Climate Protection is a nonprofit that was begun by the vice president using the proceeds from an inconvenient truth. So the idea of the alliance is to mobilize millions of people in the United States and around the world to raise their voices and stop the climate crisis. And the specific goal of the alliance is to use those raised voices to affect policy change. So we want to take the critical mass of supporters and direct them specifically at people who make or influence policy in Washington, D.C., to make sure that we're passing policy and affecting legislation that can have a serious positive impact on the countries addressing the climate crisis.
So this is a political activism program that you're doing.
Yeah, and we think of it in a non-political way because, you know, if you think about the climate crisis, it's not going to discriminate between Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
This really should not be a partisan issue. But it is one that, to the extent that the policymaking process is a political process, we have to operate in that world, and that's how we affect policy. So,
well, you have a really clever way that you've done this bipartisan, evoked this bipartisan connection and gathering participation. I'm going to go to a short break to thank my sponsors. So I want to do that. And when we come back, I want to talk about some fun specifics of the campaign. Great. So I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and we're with Matt Williams. He is the EVP and partner and group planning expert at the Martin Agency. We'll be back and we're going to talk about the We campaign. We're going to sing for you. We're going to do all kinds of fun stuff. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Listen to Money, Mission, and Meaning. Passion at work, purpose at play. A weekly audio program bringing you success in the business of life on personallifemedia.com.
We're back, and I'm with Matt Williams of the Martin Agency. So, Matt, we were talking about the We campaign, and you were talking about how climate protection, climate change, all of the problems that we have with this the need for clean energy, et cetera, that it's a bipartisan issue. Tell us about some of the things you've done in putting unusual pairs together in the campaign.
Sure. You know, one of the things we realized we had to do was change the way people talk about this issue so that it's not an issue that grinds to a halt because of the partisan lockdown that happens in Washington. So the idea behind the Unlikely Alliances campaign, which is the commercial with Al Sharpton and Pat Robertson sitting on the couch, is that these are people who don't agree on anything except this one thing, which is climate change has to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind that campaign was to take climate change out of this partisan conversation and say, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you have to agree that we have to solve this problem.
You had House Speaker Nancy Pelosi paired up with former Speaker, Republican Speaker Newt Gingrich in
ad
as well.
Yep.
So
they don't agree on much.
Yeah, right. They don't, but they agree on this.
Yep.
Now, one of the things that I noticed in reading the press releases about the We campaign is that there's this stated goal of it's a 3-year program and that you want to have involvement of 10 million people. I noticed on the site that maybe a week or so ago, there were almost 1.7 million people who had signed up. Why 3 years? Why 10 million? What are the ultimate goals of this campaign? What is all that work?
Well, as I mentioned, the ultimate goal is to affect policy change. And the vice president's been really focused on this idea of the kind of the maximum time threshold that we can put on this thing is 3 years, because he thinks that if we haven't done what we need to do in that period of time to engage millions of people around this issue, it's taking too long. So he set the 3-year goal so he can have an aggressive time goal and go out and publicize that goal and add to the urgency of joining this thing, because it's a very urgent problem and we need to solve it. And we can.
You have a lot of amazing support. I mean, the Girl Scouts of America and other big Sierra Club and other big organizations are supporting it. But what you're really looking for is this grassroots activism, this bipartisan grassroots activism. The website URL is wecansolveit.org. I know you want all of us to go there. When we go there, what are we doing and why are we doing it?
You are getting more deeply engaged in the climate crisis. So if you're looking for more information about it, you can find it at the site. If you're looking for ways to get directly involved in your local community, you can find that at the site. If you're looking to donate money to the alliance, you can do it there. So the site was purposely set up in a way that no matter what your level of engagement in the climate crisis is, when you get there, you can find information or activities that can deepen your level of engagement and kind of push you down that brand experience path, you know, back to the earlier conversation. So what we want to do is get people to register, because we can use that number to prove to policymakers that there are millions and millions of people who are paying attention to this issue.
Makes sense. And one of the things that I think a lot of my listeners can support with is for every person who listens to Dishy Mix, we're those kind of super influencer people, you know, the digerati that when we do something, 25 or 2,500 people know about it because we're such big online users of things like Facebook and MySpace, et cetera. I noticed there's a really well done Facebook application that lets people bring that app on to their Facebook page and also get points toward raising money. There's some like matching contribution funds that if you're a participant in spreading the word about We Can Solve It, you can actually help raise money for the organization.
Great.
So I think that's something that if you're listening right now and you want to check it out, of course, go sign up at We Can Solve It, and also maybe take a look at something like the Facebook app that helps spread the awareness. So, Matt, I want to keep talking about that, but I also want to go on to Geico, because that's been a great account for your organization. I think you grew that in 10 years from a $3 billion business, which wasn't too bad, to an $11 billion business, and it's continued to grow beyond that. Tell us the strategy behind that. We know it as a consumer, but give us the strat.
Yeah, Geico's been amazing for us. And if you think about how you consume messages, Susan, how we all do, it's changed so much over time. And you think about a storyline, you think about it in terms of storylines, and you think about a Starsky and Hutch episode from 25 years ago, right? It was a very linear kind of storyline. It wasn't very nuanced. It didn't have a lot of layers. It was just, you know, show up at the station house, get a call, they run around in their car, they talk to Huggy Bear, and then they make a joke, catch the bad guy, and it's out. You think about The Sopranos. The Sopranos is multiple storylines going on at the same time, lots of intricacies, lots of depth, lots of different characters. And I think consumers have gotten to the point where they can not only consume television shows that way, but brands can present themselves that way too. So Geico is a great example of what we like to call multiple storylines. And if you think about the Geico campaign, there's a part of that campaign that deals with service. There's a part that deals with saving money. There's a part that deals with different insurance lines, whether it's RVs or boats or whatever. And they all come together to create this really powerful feeling around this brand. But what they've done is broken the traditional assumption of slavish consistency and creativity. And this multiple storyline phenomenon that's been working with Geico has been really amazing, and it's made us question and our clients question some of the long-held assumptions that we've had in marketing, mainly around this area of having to be slavishly consistent. We find that consumers are much more able to assimilate multiple storylines around brands, and Geico's a great example of it.
I love that. The only thing that I'd say is consistent is 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you talk about
it.
Absolutely. When you talk about multiple storylines, it doesn't mean that we don't have the responsibility to create a unifying brand idea for this brand.
Mm-hmm.
We do. But what we have is the latitude to bring it to life in different creative ways, and we may have more latitude than traditional marketing has always assumed. All those different creative ways have to come back up to a unifying brand idea. But the creativity that lives below it can be a little more diverse than we might have assumed before.
Well, Matt, I'm so pleased at how amazingly, beautifully eloquent you are about the subject of branding. You're delighting me in this conversation.
Oh,
and
you
are very, very eloquent and articulate about this. I love it. I'm not surprised, because one of the things I asked you when we were preparing for the show was what book you most recommended to your friends. And you told me Anything by Martin Amis. He's got the sharpest pen on earth. And I thought, Martin Amis, I've never heard of him. So I looked him up. I ended up on Wikipedia. And here's what Wikipedia had to say about him. Amis's raw material is what he sees as the absurdity of the postmodern condition with its grotesque caricatures. He has thus sometimes been portrayed as the undisputed master of what the New York Times has called the new unpleasantness. I thought, okay, this guy's freaky deaky.
Yeah, that's right. The unpleasantness.
The new unpleasantness, not just the old unpleasantness. This is the new. It sounds super duper gritty.
Oh, it totally is. And the great thing about Amos is that he confronts that kind of stuff, not in a terrifying way, but in a way that brings out the humor in it. And he's got this unbelievable talent for cutting straight to what's either funny or ironic or shocking about things that we see all around us, but maybe haven't looked at that way. He's an amazing, amazing writer.
Well, dude is prolific, too. So there's a huge list of books he's written, novels, collections of short stories. What should we start with? What's the best? What's the quintessential Amos?
There are a couple. One is a book called Time's Arrow.
Okay.
Which is really short, but amazingly cool because he completely turns the kind of the time continuum on its head.
And this book is the one where he writes it totally backward, even the conversation is backward? Okay,
exactly.
Got it.
Uh-huh. The book reads backwards, so as you read this book, things are revealed to you in the opposite direction that you would expect, and it's pretty amazing. And he pulls it off, which is fantastic. There's another book that he's written called London Fields,
okay,
which is probably the thing that best exemplifies the description you read from the New York Times.
Okay. All right, so we're going to check out London Fields and Time's Arrow, because they both sound really fun. Well, we're almost out of time, but I want to talk about a couple of other things with you. The first one is that there's a theme with you. So, Matt, what I've noticed in this theme is I asked you what was the one thing that pushed your edge hardest in your whole life, and you told me being the lead singer in a band.
True.
When was this? Is this a current thing or is this a past thing?
No, currently I've been kicked off the microphone and I just play the guitar.
Okay.
But when I was in college, I made spending and beer money by being a lead singer in a band. Yeah.
And were you in an 80s new wave band?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was awful. It was the crazy big hair and all kinds of bad stuff.
So,
if it was by the Smiths and the Hoodoo Gurus and REM and the Cure, we were all over it.
What was your band called?
We were called the Flannel Animals.
Oh, that's really bad. I love it. And do you have a photo of yourself from that era?
I may have burned them all.
Really? Because I would
I may be able to hunt one up. We had a reunion concert back at our college a couple of years ago.
You did?
So maybe I could find some pictures from that. We're all very respectable now.
You are very respectable now. Absolutely.
Doctors, lawyers, advertising people. So
your guilty pleasure, you told me, was Duran Duran's Rio album. Did you just play it incessantly?
It's just the greatest terrible album ever made. I love it.
I do too. And you told me that you love to chill, that you love to play music with your sons.
Yeah, my kids have got the rock and roll bug, so I've got an 11-year-old who plays the guitar and a 9-year-old who plays the drums.
I think that's fantastic. So you play the guitar with, you have two boys, right?
I do.
Patrick, he's the guitar player.
Patrick's the guitar player. He's 11, and Ethan is the drummer. He's 9. So we've got a little rock and roll room set up in my house, and I'll play the guitar and sing along with them. We make a lot of noise.
They love that. I mean, when they look back on their life, they are going to remember those moments as being probably some of the quintessential special dad moments of their life, don't you
think?
Well,
that's how I think about them, so hopefully they will too.
Well, I was wondering if, you would indulge me today. I really liked Duran Duran too. I was a little bit more punk than new wave in the 80s myself. But I sure like that. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to maybe just end the show with a little chorus of the Duran Duran Rio song.
Oh, I thought you wouldn't ask. I was afraid you wouldn't ask.
And you're doing this from a conference room at one of your biggest clients in Chicago.
I am, and I'm worried they're going to walk in on this and fire me on the spot.
But you're going to do it anyway.
I'm going to do it anyway.
All right, here we go. This is our first take. Are you ready?
All right, hit it.
Her name is Rio, and she dances on the sand, just like that river twisting through a dusty land. And when she shines, she really shows you all she can. Oh, Rio, Rio, dance across the Rio Grande.
My client just walked in. No kidding.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I'm
Say
mortified.
Hi. Say hi to your client.
I'm mortified.
Say, I'm singing Duran Duran on Dishy Mix. I can't be bothered.
She made a funny face at me and walked out.
Well, you maintained really well right in the middle of that.
Well, that's one thing they teach you is never stop.
I thought we sounded pretty good.
I'd hire us.
I think everyone else thinks we sound like some old douchebags from the 80s. But
well, you know what? They're right and we're right.
Exactly. Everybody wins. Yep. Hey, that was super fun, Matt. Thank you for teaching us about account planning, talking to us about business strategy, and singing some great new romantic songs.
Thanks, Susan.
I love it. Yeah, it was really fun. So, Matt, I will talk to you soon, and I want to thank everyone who is having fun with us on the show today. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. You got to know Matt Williams from the Martin Agency. I hope you'll go to WeCanSolveIt.org and spread the word. We all need to take care of climate change. All right, have a great day. I'm your host, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Find more great shows like this on PersonalLifeMedia.com.